washing the grit from them. Our eyes fluttered, blinking against the dripping. We did not care about the grit in our eyes. Our chin arched up, desperately searching, our mouth opening and closing with blind, pathetic weakness, like a newly hatched bird. We thought we heard a sigh. And then the water flowed into our mouth, and we gulped at it and choked on it. The water vanished while we choked, and our weak hands grasped out for it. A flat, heavy thumping pounded our back until we could breathe. Our hands kept clutching the air, looking for the water. We definitely heard a sigh this time. Something pressed to our cracked lips, and the water flowed again. We guzzled, careful not to inhale it this time. Not that we cared if we choked, but we did not want the water taken away again. We drank until our bellies stretched and ached. The water trickled to a stop, and we cried out hoarsely in protest. Another rim was pressed to our lips, and we gulped frantically until it was empty, too. Our stomach would explode with another mouthful, yet we blinked and tried to focus, to see if we could find more. It was too dark. We could not see a single star. And then we blinked again and realized that the darkness was much closer than the sky. A figure hovered over us, blacker than the night. There was a low sound of fabric rubbing against itself, and sand shifting under a heel. The figure leaned away, and we heard a sharp rip, the sound of a zipper, deafening in the absolute stillness of the night. Like a blade, light cut into our eyes. We moaned at the pain of it, and our hand flew up to cover our closed eyes. Even behind our lids, the light was too bright. The light disappeared, and we felt the breath of the next sigh hit our face. We opened our eyes carefully, more blind than before. Whoever faced us sat very still and said nothing. We began to feel the tension of the moment, but it felt far away, outside ourselves. It was hard to care about anything but the water in our belly and where we could find more. We tried to concentrate, to see what had rescued us. The first thing we could make out, after minutes of blinking and squinting, was the thick whiteness that fell from the dark face, a million splinters of pale in the night. When we grasped that this was a beard, like Santa Claus, we thought chaotically. The other pieces of the face were supplied by our memory. Everything fit into place. The big cleft-tip nose, the wide cheekbones, the thick white brows, the eyes set deep into the wrinkled fabric of skin. Though we could see only hints of each feature, we knew how light would expose them.
"Uncle Jeb," we croaked in surprise. "You found us."
Uncle Jeb, squatting next to us, rocked back on his heels when we said his name.
"Well now,"
he said, and his gruff voice brought back 100 memories.
"Well now, here's a pickle."
Chapter 13. Sentenced.
"Are they here?"
We choked out the words. They burst from us like the water in our lungs had, expelled. After water, this question was all that mattered.
"Did they make it?"
Uncle Jeb's face was impossible to read in the darkness.
"Who?"
he asked.
"Jamie. Jared."
Our whisper burned like a shout.
"Jared was with Jamie, our brother. Are they here? Did they come? Did you find them too?"
There was barely a pause.
"No."
His answer was forceful, and there was no pity in it, no feeling at all.
"No,"
we whispered. We were not echoing him, we were protesting against getting our life back. What was the point? We closed our eyes again and listened to the pain in our body. We let that drown out the pain in our mind.
"Look,"
Uncle Jeb said after a moment.
I have something to take care of. You rest for a bit, and I'll be back for you."
We didn't hear the meaning in his words, just the sounds. Our eyes stayed closed. His footsteps crunched quietly away from us. We couldn't tell which direction he went. We didn't care, anyway.
They were gone. There was no way to find them, no hope. Jared and Jamie had disappeared, something they knew well how to do, and we would never see them again. The water and the cooler night air were making us lucid, something we did not want. We rolled over to bury our face against the sand again. We were so tired, past the point of exhaustion and into some deeper, more painful state. Surely we could sleep. All we had to do was not think. We could do that. We did. When we woke, it was still night, but dawn was threatening on the eastern horizon. The mountains were lined with dull red. Our mouth tasted of dust, and at first we were sure that we had dreamed Uncle Jed's appearance. Of course we had. Our head was clearer this morning, and we noticed quickly the strange shape near our right cheek. Something that was not a rock or a cactus. We touched it, and it was hard and smooth. We nudged it, and the delicious sound of sloshing water came from inside. Uncle Jeb was real, and he'd left us a canteen. We sat up carefully, surprised when we didn't break in two like a withered stick. Actually, we felt better. The water must have had time to work its way through some of our body. The pain was dull, and for the first time in a long while we felt hungry again. Our fingers were stiff and clumsy as we twisted the cap from the top of the canteen. It wasn't all the way full, but there was enough water to stretch the walls of our belly again. It must have shrunk. We drank it all. We were done with rationing. We dropped the metal canteen to the sand where it made a dull thud in the pre-dawn silence. We felt wide awake now. We sighed, preferring unconsciousness, and let our head fall into our hands. What now?
Why did you give it water, Jeb? An angry voice demanded, close behind our back.
We whirled, twisting onto our knees. What we saw made our heart falter and our awareness splinter apart. There were 8 humans, half-circled around where I knelt under the tree. There was no question they were humans, all of them. I'd never seen faces contorted into such expressions. Not on my kind. These lips, twisted with hatred, pulled back over clenched teeth like wild animals. These brows pulled low over eyes that burned with fury. 6 men and 2 women, some of them very big, most of them bigger than me. I felt the blood drain from my face as I realized why they held their hands so oddly, gripped tightly in front of them, each balancing an object. They held weapons. Some held blades, a few short ones like those I had kept in my kitchen, and some longer, one huge and menacing. This knife had no purpose in a kitchen. Melanie supplied the name. A machete. Others held long bars, some metal, some wooden, clubs. I recognized Uncle Jeb in their midst. Held loosely in his hands was an object I'd never seen in person, only in Melanie's memories. Like the big knife. It was a rifle. I saw horror, but Melanie saw all this with wonder, her mind boggling at their numbers. 8 human survivors. She'd thought Jeb was alone, or in the best-case scenario, with only 2 others. To see so many of her kind alive filled her with joy. "You're an idiot," I told her. "Look at them. See them." I forced her to see it from my perspective, to see the threatening shapes inside the dirty jeans and light cotton shirts, brown with dust. They might have been human, as she thought of the word, once, but at this moment they were something else. They were barbarians, monsters. They hung over us, slavering for blood. There was a death sentence in every pair of eyes. Melanie saw all this, and though grudgingly, she had to admit that I was right. At this moment, her beloved humans were at their worst. Like the newspaper stories we'd seen in the abandoned shack, we were looking at killers. We should have been wiser. We should have died yesterday. Why would Uncle Jeb keep us alive for this? A shiver passed through me at the thought. I'd skimmed through the histories of human atrocities. I'd had no stomach for them. Perhaps I should have concentrated better. I knew there were reasons why humans let their enemies live for a little while. Things they wanted from their minds or their bodies. Of course, it sprang into my head immediately. The one secret they would want from me. The one I could never, never tell them. No matter what they did to me, I would have to kill myself first. I did not let Melanie see the secret I protected. I used her own defenses against her and threw up a wall in my head to hide behind while I thought of the information for the first time since implantation. There had been no reason to think of it before. Melanie was hardly even curious on the other side of the wall. She made no effort to break through it. There were much more immediate concerns than the fact that she had not been the only one keeping information in reserve. Did it matter that I protected my secret from her? I wasn't as strong as Melanie. I had no doubt she could endure torture. How much pain could I stand before I gave them anything they wanted? My stomach heaved. Suicide was a repugnant option. Worse, because it would be murder, too. Melanie would be part of either torture or death. I would wait for that until I had absolutely no other choice.
No, they can't. Uncle Jeb would never let them hurt me.
Uncle Jeb doesn't know you're here, I reminded her.
Tell him.
I focused on the old man's face. The thick white beard kept me from seeing the set of his mouth, but his eyes did not seem to burn like the others. From the corner of my eye, I could see a few of the men shift their gaze from me to him. They were waiting for him to answer the question that had alerted me to their presence. Uncle Jeb stared at me, ignoring them.
I can't tell him, Melanie. He won't believe me. And if they think I'm lying to them, they'll think I'm a seeker. They must have experience enough to know that only a seeker would come out here with a lie, a story designed for infiltration.
Melanie recognized the truth of my thought at once. The very word seeker made her recoil with hatred, and she knew these strangers would have the same reaction.
It doesn't matter anyway. I'm a soul. That's enough for them.
The one with the machete, the biggest man there, black-haired, with oddly fair skin and vivid blue eyes, made a sound of disgust and spit on the ground. He took a step forward, slowly raising the long blade.
Better fast than slow. Better that it was this brutal hand and not mine that killed us. Better that I didn't die a creature of violence, accountable for Melanie's blood as well as my own.
Hold it, Kyle.
Jeb's words were unhurried, almost casual, but the big man stopped. He grimaced and turned to face Melanie's uncle.
Why? You said you made sure. It's one of them.
I recognized the voice. He was the same one who'd asked Jeb why he'd given me water.
Well, yes, she surely is. But it's a little complicated.
How? Oh.
A different man asked the question. He stood next to the big, dark-haired Kyle, and they looked so much alike that they had to be brothers.
See, this here's my niece, too. Not anymore, she's not, Kyle said flatly.
He spit again and took another deliberate step in my direction, knife ready. I could see from the way his shoulders leaned into the action that words would not stop him again. I closed my eyes. There were two sharp metallic clicks, and someone gasped. My eyes flew open again.
I said, hold it, Kyle.
Uncle Jeb's voice was still relaxed, but the long rifle was gripped tightly in his hands now, and the barrels were pointed at Kyle's back. Kyle was frozen just steps from me. His machete hung motionless in the air above his shoulder.
Jeb,
the brother said, horrified.
What are you doing? Step away from the girl, Kyle.
Kyle turned his back to us, whirling on Jeb in fury.
It's not a girl, Jeb.
Jeb shrugged. The gun stayed steady in his hands, pointed at Kyle.
There are things to be discussed.
The doctor might be able to learn something from it,
a female voice offered gruffly. I cringed at the words, hearing in them my worst fears. When Jeb had called me his niece just now, I'd foolishly let a spark of hope flame to life. Perhaps there would be pity. I'd been stupid to think that, even for a second. Death would be the only pity I could hope for from these creatures. I looked at the woman who'd spoken, surprised to see that she was as old as Jeb, maybe older. Her hair was dark gray rather than white, which is why I hadn't noticed her age before. Her face was a mass of wrinkles, all of them turning down into angry lines. But there was something familiar about the features behind the lines. Melanie made the connection between this ancient face and another smoother face in her memory.
"Aunt Maggie? You're here? How? Is Sharon?"
The words were all Melanie, but they gushed from my mouth, and I was unable to stop them. Sharing for so long in the desert had made her stronger, or me weaker. Or maybe it was just that I was concentrating on which direction the death blow was going to fall from. I was bracing for our murder, and she was having a family reunion. Melanie got only halfway through her surprised exclamation. The much-aged woman named Maggie lunged forward with a speed that belied her brittle exterior. She didn't raise the hand that held the black crowbar. That was the hand I was watching, so I didn't see her free hand swing out to slap me hard across the face. My head snapped back and then forward. She slapped me again.
"You won't fool us, you parasite. We know how you work. We know how well you can mimic us."
I tasted blood inside my cheek. "Don't do that again," I scolded Melanie. "I told you what they'd think." Melanie was too shocked to answer.
"Now, Maggie," Jeb began in a soothing tone. "Don't you now Maggie me, you old fool. She's probably led a legion of them down on us."
She backed away from me, her eyes measuring my stillness as if I were a coiled snake. She stopped beside her brother.
"I don't see anyone," Jeb retorted. "Hey!"
he yelled, and I flinched in surprise. I wasn't the only one. Jeb waved his left hand over his head, the gun still clenched in the right.
"Over here!"
"Shut up,"
Maggie growled, shoving his chest. Though I had good reason to know she was strong, Jeb didn't wobble.
"She's alone, Mag. She was pretty much dead when I found her. She's not in such great shape now. The centipedes don't sacrifice their own that way. They would have come for her much sooner than I did. Whatever else she is, she's alone."
I saw the image of the long, many-legged insect in my head, but I didn't make the connection. "He's talking about you," Melanie translated. She placed the picture of the ugly bug next to my memory of a bright silver soul. I didn't see a resemblance. "I wonder how he knows what you look like," Melanie wondered absently. My memories of a soul's true appearance had been new to her in the beginning. I didn't have time to wonder with her. Jeb was walking toward me, and the others were close behind. Kyle's hand hovered at Jeb's shoulder, ready to restrain him or throw him out of the way, I couldn't tell. Jeb put his gun in his left hand and extended the right to me. I eyed it warily, waiting for it to hit me.
"Come on,"
he urged gently.
"If I could carry you that far, I would have brought you home last night. You're gonna have to walk some more."
"No,"
Kyle grunted.
"I'm taking her back,"
Jeb said, and for the first time there was a harsher tone to his voice. Under his beard, his jaw flexed into a stubborn line.
"Jeb,"
Maggie protested.
"It's my place, Mag. I'll do what I want."
"Old fool,"
she snapped again. Jeb reached down and grabbed my hand from where it lay curled into a fist against my thigh. He yanked me to my feet. It was not cruelty. It was merely as if he was in a hurry. Yet was it not the very worst form of cruelty to prolong my life for the reasons he had? I rocked unsteadily. I couldn't feel my legs very well, just prickles like needle points as the blood flowed down. There was a hiss of disapproval behind him. It came from more than one mouth.
"Okay, whoever you are,"
he said to me, his voice still kind.
Let's get out of here before it heats up.
The one who must have been Kyle's brother put his hand on Jeb's arm.
You can't just show it where we live, Jeb.
I suppose it doesn't matter, Maggie said harshly. It won't get a chance to tell tales.
Jeb sighed and pulled a bandana, all but hidden by his beard, from around his neck.
This is silly,
he muttered. But he rolled the dirty fabric, stiff with dry sweat, into a blindfold. I kept perfectly still as he tied it over my eyes, fighting the panic that increased when I couldn't see my enemies. I couldn't see, but I knew it was Jeb who put one hand on my back and guided me forward. None of the others would have been so gentle. We started forward, toward the north, I thought. No one spoke at first. There was just the sound of sand grinding under many feet. The ground was even, but I stumbled on my numb legs again and again. Jeb was patient. His guiding hand was almost chivalrous. I felt the sun rise as we walked. Some of the footsteps were faster than others. They moved ahead of us until they were hard to hear. It sounded like it was the minority that stayed with Jeb and me. I must not have looked like I needed many guards. I was faint with hunger, and I swayed with every step. My head felt dizzy and hollow.
You aren't planning to tell him, are you?
It was Maggie's voice. It came from a few feet behind me, and it sounded like an accusation.
He's got a right to know, Jeb replied.
The stubborn note was back in his voice.
It's an unkind thing you are doing, Jebediah.
Life is unkind, Magnolia.
It was hard to decide who was the most terrifying of the two. Was it Jeb, who seemed so intent on keeping me alive? Or Maggie, who had first suggested the doctor, an appellation that filled me with instinctive, nauseated dread, but who seemed more worried about cruelty than her brother? We walked in silence again for a few hours. When my legs buckled, Jeb lowered me to the ground and held a canteen to my lips as he had in the night.
Let me know when you're ready, Jeb told me.
His voice sounded kind, though I knew that was a false interpretation. Someone sighed impatiently.
Why are you doing this, Jeb?
A man asked. I'd heard the voice before. It was one of the brothers.
For Doc? You could have just told Kyle that. You didn't need to pull a gun on him. Kyle needs a gun pulled on him more often, Jeb muttered. Please tell me this wasn't about sympathy, the man continued. After all I've seen, if I hadn't learned compassion, I wouldn't be worth much. But no, it was not about sympathy. If I had enough sympathy for this poor creature, I would have let her die.
I shivered in the oven-hot air.
What then? Kyle's brother demanded.
There was a long silence, and then Jeb's hand touched mine. I grasped it, needing the help to get back on my feet. His other hand pressed against my back, and I started forward again.
Curiosity,
Jeb said in a low voice. No one replied. As we walked, I considered a few sure facts. One, I was not the first soul they'd captured. There was already a set routine here. This Doc had tried to get his answer from others before me. Two, he had tried unsuccessfully. If any soul had foregone suicide only to crack under the human's torture, they would not need me now. My death would have been mercifully swift. Oddly, I couldn't bring myself to hope for a quick end, though, or to try to effect that outcome. It would be easy to do, even without doing the deed myself. I would only have to tell them a lie, pretend to be a seeker, tell them my colleagues were tracking me right now, bluster and threaten. Or tell them the truth, that Melanie lived on inside me and that she had brought me here. They would see another lie, and one so richly irresistible. The idea that the human could live on after implantation, so tempting to believe from their perspective, so insidious, that they would believe I was a seeker more surely than if I claimed it. They would assume a trap, get rid of me quickly, and find a new place to hide, far away from here.
You're probably right, Melanie agreed. It's what I would do.
but I wasn't in pain yet. And so either form of suicide was hard to embrace. My instinct for survival sealed my lips. The memory of my last session with my comforter, a time so civilized it seemed to belong to a different planet, flashed through my head. Melanie challenging me to have her removed, a seemingly suicidal impulse, but only a bluff. I remembered thinking how hard it was to contemplate death from a comfortable chair. Last night, Melanie and I had wished for death, but death had been only inches away at the time. It was different now that I was on my feet again. "I don't want to die either," Melanie whispered. "But maybe you're wrong. Maybe that's not why they're keeping us alive. I don't understand why they would..." She didn't want to imagine the things they might do to us. I was sure she could come up with worse than I. "What answer would they want from you that bad?" "I'll never tell. Not you. Not any human." A bold declaration, but then I wasn't in pain yet. Another hour had passed. The sun was directly overhead, the heat of it like a crown of fire on my hair, when the sound changed. The grinding steps that I barely heard anymore turned to echoes ahead of me. Jeb's feet still crunched against the sand like mine, but someone in front of us had reached a new terrain.
"Careful now," Jeb warned me. "Watch your head."
I hesitated, not sure what I was watching for, or how to watch with no eyes. His hand left my back and pressed down on my head, telling me to duck. I bent forward. My neck was stiff. He guided me forward again, and I heard our footsteps make the same echoing sound. The ground didn't give like sand, didn't feel loose like rock. It was flat and solid beneath my feet. The sun was gone. I could no longer feel it burn my skin or scorch my hair. I took another step, and a new air touched my face. It was not a breeze. This was stagnant. I moved into it. The dry desert wind was gone. This air was still and cooler. There was the faintest hint of moisture to it, a mustiness that I could both smell and taste. There were so many questions in my mind, and in Melanie's. She wanted to ask hers, but I kept silent. There was nothing either of us could say that would help us now.
"Okay, you can straighten up," Jeb told me.
I raised my head slowly. Even with the blindfold, I could tell that there was no light. It was utterly black around the edges of the bandana. I could hear the others behind me, shuffling their feet impatiently, waiting for us to move forward.
"This way,"
Jeb said, and he was guiding me again. Our footsteps echoed back from close by. The space we were in must have been quite small. I found myself ducking my head instinctively. We went a few steps farther, and then we rounded a sharp curve that seemed to turn us back the way we'd come. The ground started to slant downward. The angle got steeper with every step, and Jeb gave me his rough hand to keep me from falling. I don't know how long I slipped and skidded my way through the darkness. The hike probably felt longer than it was, with each minute slowed by my terror. We took another turn, and then the floor started to climb upward. My legs were so numb and wooden that as the path got steeper, Jeb had to half-drag me up the incline. The air got mustier and moister the farther we went, but the blackness didn't change. The only sounds were our footsteps and their nearby echoes. The pathway flattened out and began to turn and twist like a serpent. Finally there was a brightness around the top and bottom of my blindfold. I wished that it would slip, as I was too frightened to pull it off myself. It seemed to me that I wouldn't be so terrified if I could just see where I was and who was with me. With the light came noise. Strange noise, a low, murmuring babble. It sounded almost like a waterfall. The babble got louder as we moved forward, and the closer it got, the less it sounded like water. It was too varied, low and high pitches mingling and echoing. If it had not been so discordant, it might have sounded like an uglier version of the constant music I'd heard and sung on the singing world. The darkness of the blindfold suited that memory, the memory of blindness. Melanie understood the cacophony before I did. I'd never heard the sound because I'd never been with humans before. "It's an argument," she realized. "It sounds like so many people arguing." She was drawn by the sound. Were there more people here, then? That there were even 8 had surprised us both. What was this place? Hands touched the back of my neck, and I shied away from them.
"Easy now," Jeb said.
He pulled the blindfold off my eyes. I blinked slowly, and the shadows around me settled into shapes I could understand. Rough, uneven walls, a pocked ceiling, a worn, dusty floor. We were underground, somewhere in a natural cave formation. We couldn't be that deep. I thought we'd hiked upward longer than we'd slid downward. The rock walls and ceiling were a dark, purpley brown, and they were riddled with shallow holes like Swiss cheese. The edges of the lower holes were worn down, but over my head the circles were more defined and their rims looked sharp. The light came from a round hole ahead of us, its shape not unlike the holes that peppered the cavern, but larger. This was an entrance, a doorway to a brighter place. Melanie was eager, fascinated by the concept of more humans. I held back, suddenly worried that blindness might be better than sight. Jeb sighed.
"Sorry," he muttered,
so low that I was certainly the only one to hear. I tried to swallow and could not. My head started to spin, but that might have been from hunger. My hands were trembling like leaves in a stiff breeze as Jeb prodded me through the big hole. The tunnel opened into a chamber so vast that at first I couldn't accept what my eyes told me. The ceiling was too bright and too high. It was like an artificial sky. I tried to see what brightened it, but it sent down sharp lances of light that hurt my eyes. I was expecting the babble to get louder, but it was abruptly dead quiet in the huge cavern. The floor was dim compared to the brilliant ceiling so far above. It took a moment for my eyes to make sense of all the shapes. A crowd. There was no other word for it. There was a crowd of humans standing stock still and silent, all staring at me with the same burning, hate-filled expressions I'd seen at dawn. Melanie was too stunned to do anything more than count. 10, 15, 20, 25, 26, 27. I didn't care how many there were. I tried to tell her how little it mattered. It wouldn't take 20 of them to kill me. To kill us. I tried to make her see how precarious our position was. But she was beyond my warnings at the moment. Lost in this human world she'd never dreamed was here. One man stepped forward from the crowd, and my eyes darted first to his hands, looking for the weapon they would carry. His hands were clenched in fists, but empty of any other threat. My eyes, adjusting to the dazzling light, made out the sun-gilded tint of his skin and then recognized it. Choking on the sudden hope that dizzied me, I lifted my eyes to the man's face. Chapter 14. Disputed. It was too much for both of us, seeing him here now, after already accepting that we'd never see him again, after believing that we'd lost him forever. It froze me solid, made me unable to react. I wanted to look at Uncle Jeb, to understand his heartbreaking answer in the desert, but I couldn't move my eyes. I stared at Jared's face, uncomprehending. Melanie reacted differently.
"Jared," she cried.
Through my damaged throat, the sound was just a croak. She jerked me forward, much the same way as she had in the desert, assuming control of my frozen body. The only difference was that this time it was by force. I wasn't able to stop her fast enough. She lurched forward, raising my arms to reach out for him. I screamed a warning at her in my head, but she wasn't listening to me. She was barely aware that I was even there. No one tried to stop her as she staggered toward him. No one but me. She was within inches of touching him, and still she didn't see what I saw. She didn't see how his face had changed in the long months of separation, how it had hardened, how the lines pulled in different directions now. She didn't see that the unconscious smile she remembered would not physically fit on this new face. Only once had she seen his face turn dark and dangerous, and that expression was nothing to the one he wore now. She didn't see, or maybe she didn't care. His reach was longer than mine. Before Melanie could make my fingers touch him, his arm shot out, and the back of his hand smashed into the side of my face. The blow was so hard that my feet left the ground before my head slammed into the rock floor. I heard the rest of my body hit the floor with dull thumps, but I didn't feel it. My eyes rolled back in my head, and a ringing sound shimmered in my ears. I fought the dizziness that threatened to spin me unconscious. "Stupid, stupid," I whimpered at her. "I told you not to do that." "Jared's here! Jared's alive! Jared's here!" She was incoherent, chanting the words like they were lyrics to a song. I tried to focus my eyes, but the strange ceiling was blinding. I twisted my head away from the light and then swallowed a sob as the motion sent daggers of agony through the side of my face. I could barely handle the pain of this one spontaneous blow. What hope did I have of enduring an intensive, calculated onslaught? There was a shuffle of feet beside me. My eyes moved instinctively to find the threat, and I saw Uncle Jeb standing over me. He had one hand half stretched out toward me, but he hesitated, looking away. I raised my head an inch, stifling another moan, to see what he saw. Jared was walking toward us, and his face was the same as those of the barbarians in the desert, only it was beautiful rather than frightening in its fury. My heart faltered and then beat unevenly, and I wanted to laugh at myself. Did it matter that he was beautiful, that I loved him, when he was going to kill me? I stared at the murder in his expression and tried to hope that rage would win out over expediency, but a true death wish evaded me. Jeb and Jared locked eyes for a long moment. Jared's jaw clenched and unclenched, but Jeb's face was calm. The silent confrontation ended when Jared suddenly exhaled in an angry gust and took a step back. Jeb reached down for my hand and put his other arm around my back to pull me up. My head whirled and ached, my stomach heaved. If it hadn't been empty for days, I might have thrown up. It was like my feet weren't touching the ground. I wobbled and pitched forward. Jeb steadied me and then gripped my elbow to keep me standing. Jared watched all this with a teeth-baring grimace. Like an idiot, Melanie struggled to move toward him again. But I was over the shock of seeing him here, and less stupid than she was now. She wouldn't break through again. I locked her away behind every bar I could create in my head. "Just be quiet. Can't you see how he loathes me? Anything you say will make it worse. We're dead." "But Jared's alive! Jared's here!" she crooned. The quiet in the cavern dissolved. Whispers came from every side, all at the same time, as if I'd missed some cue. I couldn't make out any meanings in the hissing murmurs. My eyes darted around the mob of humans. Every one of them an adult. No smaller, younger figure among them. My heart ached at the absence, and Melanie fought to voice the question. I hushed her firmly. There wasn't anything to see here, nothing but anger and hatred on strangers' faces or the anger and hatred on Jared's face. Until another man pushed his way through the whispering throng. He was built slim and tall, his skeletal structure more obvious under his skin than most. His hair was washed out, either pale brown or a dark, nondescript blonde. Like his bland hair and his long body, his features were mild and thin. There was no anger in his face, which was why it held my eye. The others made way for this apparently unassuming man as if he had some status among them. Only Jared didn't defer to him. He held his ground, staring only at me. The tall man stepped around him, not seeming to notice the obstacle in his path any more than he would a pile of rock.
"Okay, okay," he said in an oddly cheery voice as he circled Jared and came to face me. "I'm here. What have we got?"
It was Aunt Maggie who answered him, appearing at his elbow.
"Jeb found it in the desert. Used to be our niece, Melanie. It seemed to be following the directions he gave her."
She flashed a dirty look at Jeb.
"Mm-hmm,"
the tall, bony man murmured, his eyes appraising me curiously. It was strange, that appraisal. He looked as if he liked what he saw. I couldn't fathom why he would. My gaze shied away from his to another woman, a young woman who peered around his side, her hand resting on his arm, my eyes drawn by her vivid hair.
"Sharon!"
Melanie cried. Melanie's cousin saw the recognition in my eyes, and her face hardened. I pushed Melanie roughly to the back of my head.
"Shh!"
"Mm-hmm," the tall man said again, nodding. He reached one hand out to my face and seemed surprised when I recoiled from it, flinching into Jeb's side.
"It's okay," the tall man said, smiling a little in encouragement. "I won't hurt you."
He reached toward my face again. I shrunk into Jeb's side like before, but Jeb flexed his arm and nudged me forward. The tall man touched my jaw below my ear, his fingers gentler than I expected, and turned my face away. I felt his finger trace a line on the back of my neck, and I realized that he was examining the scar from my insertion. I watched Jared's face from the corner of my eye. What this man was doing clearly upset him, and I thought I knew why, how he must have hated that slender pink line on my neck. Jared frowned, but I was surprised that some of the anger had drained from his expression. His eyebrows pulled together. It made him look confused. The tall man dropped his hands and stepped away from me. His lips were pursed, his eyes alight with some challenge.
"She looks healthy enough, aside from some recent exhaustion, dehydration, and malnourishment. I think you've put enough water back into her so that the dehydration won't interfere." "Okay, then."
He made an odd, unconscious motion with his hands, as if he were washing them.
"Let's get started."
Then his words and his brief examination fit together, and I understood. This gentle-seeming man who had just promised not to hurt me was the doctor. Uncle Jeb sighed heavily and closed his eyes. The doctor held a hand out to me, inviting me to put mine in his. I clenched my hands into fists behind my back. He looked at me carefully again, appraising the terror in my eyes. His mouth turned down, but it was not a frown. He was considering how to proceed.
"Kyle? Ian?"
he called, craning his neck to search the assembly for the ones he summoned. My knees wobbled when the two big, black-haired brothers pressed their way forward.
"I think I need some help.
Maybe if you were to carry..." The doctor, who did not look quite so tall, standing beside Kyle, began to say.
"No."
Everyone turned to see where the dissent had come from. I didn't need to look because I recognized the voice. I looked at him anyway. Jared's eyebrows pressed down hard over his eyes. His mouth was twisted into a strange grimace. So many emotions ran across his face it was hard to pin one down. Anger, defiance, confusion, hatred, fear, pain. The doctor blinked, his face going slack with surprise.
"Jared? Is there a problem?"
"Yes."
Everyone waited. Beside me, Jeb was holding the corners of his lips down as if they were trying to lift into a grin. If that was the case, then the old man had an odd sense of humor.
"And it is?"
the doctor asked. Jared answered through his teeth.
"I'll tell you the problem, Doc. What's the difference between letting you have it or Jeb putting a bullet in its head?"
I trembled. Jeb patted my arm. The doctor blinked again.
Well, was all he said.
Jared answered his own question.
The difference is, if Jeb kills it, at least it dies cleanly.
Jared. The doctor's voice was soothing, the same tone he'd used on me. We learn so much each time. Maybe this will be the time...
Ha! Jared snorted. I don't see much progress being made, Doc.
Jared will protect us, Melanie thought faintly. It was hard to concentrate enough to form words. Not us, just your body. Close enough. Her voice seemed to come from some distance, from outside my pounding head. Sharon took a step forward so that she stood half in front of the doctor. It was a strangely protective stance.
There's no point in wasting an opportunity, she said fiercely. We all realize that this is hard for you, Jared, but in the end it's not your decision to make. We have to consider what's best for the majority.
Jared glowered at her.
No!
The word was a snarl. I could tell he had not whispered the word, yet it was very quiet in my ears. In fact, everything was suddenly quiet. Sharon's lips moved, her finger jabbed at Jared viciously, but all I heard was a soft hissing. Neither one of them took a step, but they seemed to be drifting away from me. I saw the dark-haired brothers step toward Jared with angry faces. I felt my hand try to rise in protest, but it only twitched limply. Jared's face turned red when his lips parted, and the tendons in his neck strained like he was shouting, but I heard nothing. Jeb let go of my arm, and I saw the dull gray of the rifle's barrel swing up beside me. I cringed away from the weapon, though it was not pointed in my direction. This upset my balance, and I watched the room tip very slowly to one side.
Jamie,
I sighed, as the light swirled away from my eyes. Jared's face was suddenly very close, leaning over me with a fierce expression.
Jamie?
I breathed again, this time a question.
Jamie?
Jeb's gruff voice answered from somewhere far away.
The kid is fine. Jared brought him here.
I looked at Jared's tormented face, fast disappearing into the dark mist that covered my eyes.
Thank you,
I whispered, and then I was lost in the darkness. Chapter 15 Guarded. When I came to, there was no disorientation. I knew exactly where I was, roughly speaking, and I kept my eyes closed and my breathing even. I tried to learn as much as I could about my exact situation without giving away the fact that I was conscious again. I was hungry. My stomach knotted and clenched and made angry noises. I doubted these noises would betray me. I was sure it had gurgled and complained as I slept. My head ached fiercely. It was impossible to know how much of this was from fatigue and how much was from the knocks I'd taken. I was lying on a hard surface. It was rough and pocked. It was not flat, but oddly curved, as though I was lying in a shallow bowl. It was not comfortable. My back and hips throbbed from being curled into this position. That pain was probably what had woken me. I felt far from rested. It was dark. I could tell that without opening my eyes. Not pitch black, but very dark. The air was even mustier than before, humid and corroded with a peculiar acrid bite that seemed to cling to the back of my throat. The temperature was cooler than it had been in the desert, but the incongruous moisture made it almost as uncomfortable. I was sweating again. The water Jeb had given me finding its way out through my pores. I could hear my breathing echo back to me from a few feet away. It could be that I was only close to one wall, but I guessed that I was in a very small space. I listened as hard as I could, and it sounded like my breathing echoed back from the other side as well. Knowing that I was probably still somewhere in the cavern system Jeb had brought me to, I was fairly sure what I would see when I opened my eyes. I must be in some small hole in the rock, dark purple-brown and riddled with holes like cheese. It was silent, except for the sounds my body made. Afraid to open my eyes, I relied on my ears, straining harder and harder against the silence. I couldn't hear anyone else, and this made no sense. They wouldn't have left me without a warden, would they? Uncle Jeb and his omnipresent rifle? Or someone less sympathetic? To leave me alone, that wouldn't be in character with their brutality, their natural fear and hatred of what I was. Unless... I tried to swallow, but terror closed my throat. They wouldn't leave me alone. Not unless they thought I was dead, or had made sure that I would be. Not unless there were places in these caves that no one came back from. The picture I'd been forming of my surroundings shifted dizzyingly in my head. I saw myself now at the bottom of a deep shaft, or walled into a cramped tomb. My breathing sped up, tasting the air for staleness, for some sign that my oxygen was running low. The muscles around my lungs pulled outward, filling with air for the scream that was on the way. I clenched my teeth to keep it from escaping. Sharp and close, something grated across the ground beside my head. I shrieked, and the sound of it was piercing in the small space. My eyes flew open. I jerked away from the sinister noise, throwing myself against a jagged rock wall. My hands swung up to protect my face as my head thunked painfully against the low ceiling. A dim light illuminated the perfectly round exit to the tiny bubble of a cave I was curled in. Jared's face was half lit as he leaned into the opening, one arm reaching toward me. His lips were tight with anger. A vein in his forehead pulsed as he watched my panicked reaction. He didn't move. He just stared furiously while my heart restarted and my breathing evened out. I met his glare, remembering how quiet he'd always been. Like a wraith when he wanted. No wonder I hadn't heard him sitting guard outside my cell. But I had heard something. As I remembered that, Jared shoved his extended arm closer and the grating noise repeated. I looked down. At my feet was a broken sheet of plastic serving as a tray, and on it... I lunged for the open bottle of water. I was barely aware that Jared's mouth twisted with disgust as I jerked the bottle to my lips. I was sure that would bother me later, but all I cared about now was the water. I wondered if ever in my life I would take the liquid for granted again. Given that my life was not likely to be prolonged here, the answer was probably no. Jared had disappeared, back through the circular entry. I could see a piece of his sleeve, and nothing more. The dull light came from somewhere beside him. It was an artificial bluish color. I'd gulped half the water down when a new scent caught my attention, informing me that water was not the only gift. I looked down at the tray again. Food. They were feeding me? It was the bread, a dark, unevenly shaped roll that I smelled first. But there was also a bowl of some clear liquid with the tang of onions. As I leaned closer, I could see darker chunks on the bottom. Beside this were three stubby white tubes. I guessed they were vegetables, but I didn't recognize the variety. It took only seconds for me to make these discoveries. But even in that short time, my stomach nearly jumped through my mouth trying to reach the food. I ripped into the bread. It was very dense, studded with whole grain kernels that caught in my teeth. The texture was gritty, but the flavor was wonderfully rich. I couldn't remember anything tasting more delicious to me, not even my mushed-up Twinkies. My jaw worked as fast as it could, but I swallowed most of the mouthfuls of tough bread half-chewed. I could hear each mouthful hit my stomach with a gurgle. It didn't feel as good as I thought it would. Too long empty, my stomach reacted to the food with discomfort. I ignored that and moved on to the liquid. It was soup. This went down easier. Aside from the onions I'd smelled, the taste was mild. The green chunks were soft and spongy. I drank it straight from the bowl and wished the bowl were deeper. I tipped it back to make sure I'd gotten every drop. The white vegetables were crunchy in texture, woody in taste, some kind of root. They weren't as satisfying as the soup or as tasty as the bread, but I was grateful for their bulk. I wasn't full, not close, and I probably would have started on the tray next if I thought I'd be able to chew through it. It didn't occur to me until I was finished that they shouldn't be feeding me. Not unless Jared had lost the confrontation with the doctor. Though why would Jared be my guard, if that were the case? I slid the tray away when it was empty, cringing at the noise it made. I stayed pressed against the back wall of my bubble as Jared reached in to retrieve it. This time he didn't look at me.
"Thank you,"
I whispered as he disappeared again. He said nothing. There was no change in his face. Even the bit of his sleeve did not show this time, but I was sure he was there.
"I can't believe he hit me,"
Melanie mused, her thought incredulous rather than resentful. She was not over the surprise of it yet. I hadn't been surprised in the first place. Of course he had hit me. "I wondered where you were," I answered. "It would be poor manners to get me into this mess and then abandon me." She ignored my sour tone. "I wouldn't have thought he'd be able to do it, no matter what. I don't think I could hit him."
"Sure you could. If he'd come at you with reflective eyes, you'd have done the same. You're naturally violent."
I remembered her daydreams of strangling the Seeker. That seemed like months ago, though I knew it was only days. It would make sense if it had been longer. It ought to take time to get oneself stuck in such a disastrous mire as the one I was in now. Melanie tried to consider it impartially.
"I don't think so. Not Jared. And Jamie, there's no way I could hurt Jamie, even if he was..."
She trailed off, hating that line of thought. I considered this and found it true. Even if the child had become something or someone else, neither she nor I could ever raise a hand to him.
"That's different. You're like a mother. Mothers are irrational here. Too many emotions involved."
"Motherhood is always emotional. Even for you souls." I didn't answer that.
"What do you think is going to happen now?"
"You're the expert on humans," I reminded her. "It's probably not a good thing that they're giving me food. I can think of only one reason they'd want me strong." The few specifics I remembered of historical human brutalities tangled in my head with the stories in the old newspaper we'd read the other day. Fire, that was a bad one. Melanie had burned all the fingerprints off her right hand once in a stupid accident, grabbing a pan she hadn't realized was hot. I remembered how the pain had shocked her. It was so unexpectedly sharp and demanding. It was just an accident, though. Quickly treated with ice, salves, medicine. No one had done it on purpose. Continued on from the first sickening pain, drawing it out longer and longer. I'd never lived on a planet where such atrocities could happen, even before the souls came. This place was truly the highest and the lowest of all worlds. The most beautiful senses, the most exquisite emotions, the most malevolent desires, the darkest deeds. Perhaps it was meant to be so. Perhaps without the lows, the highs could not be reached. Were the souls the exception to that rule? Could they have the light without the darkness of this world?
Felt something
when he hit you, Melanie interrupted. The words came slowly, one by one, as if she didn't want to think them. I felt something, too. It was amazing how natural it was to use sarcasm now, after spending so much time with Melanie.
He's got quite a backhand, doesn't he? That's not what I meant, I mean...
She hesitated for a long moment, and then the rest of the words came in a rush.
I thought it was all me, the way we feel about him. I thought I was in control of that.
The thoughts behind her words were clearer than the words themselves.
You thought you were able to bring me here because you wanted it so much. That you were controlling me instead of the other way around.
I tried not to be annoyed.
You thought you were manipulating me.
Yes. The chagrin in her tone was not because I was upset, but because she did not like being wrong.
But...
I waited. It came in a rush once more.
You're in love with him too, separately from me. It feels different from the way I feel, other. I didn't see that until he was there with us, until you saw him for the first time. How did that happen? How does a 3-inch-long worm fall in love with a human being?
Worm?
Sorry, I guess you sort of have...
limbs.
Not really. They're more like antennae. And I'm quite a bit longer than 3 inches when they're extended. My point is, he's not your species.
My body is human, I told her. While I'm attached to it, I'm human too.
And the way you see Jared in your memories...
Well, it's all your fault. She considered that for a moment. She didn't like it much.
So if you had gone to Tucson and gotten a new body, you wouldn't love him anymore now?
I really, really hope that's true. Neither of us was happy with my answer. I leaned my head against the top of my knees. Melanie changed the subject.
At least Jamie is safe. I knew Jared would take care of him. If I had to leave him, I couldn't have left him in better hands. I wish I could see him.
I'm not asking that. I cringed at the thought of the response that request would receive.
At the same time, I yearned to see the boy's face for myself. I wanted to be sure that he was really here, really safe, that they were feeding him and caring for him the way Melanie never could again. The way I, mother to no one, wanted to care for him. Did he have someone to sing to him at night? To tell him stories? Would this new angry Jared think of little things like that? Did he have someone to curl up against when he was frightened?
Do you think they will tell him that I'm here? Melanie asked.
Would that help or hurt him? I asked back.
Her thought was a whisper.
I don't know. I wish I could tell him that I kept my promise.
You certainly did. I shook my head, amazed. No one can say that you didn't come back, just like always.
Thanks for that.
Her voice was faint. I couldn't tell if she meant for my words now, or if she meant the bigger picture, bringing her here. I was suddenly exhausted. And I could feel that she was, too. Now that my stomach had settled a bit and felt almost halfway full, the rest of my pains were not sharp enough to keep me awake. I hesitated before moving, afraid to make any noise, but my body wanted to uncurl and stretch out. I did so as silently as I could, trying to find a piece of the bubble long enough for me. Finally, I had to stick my feet almost out the round opening. I didn't like doing it. Worried that Jared would hear the movement close to him and think I was trying to escape, but he didn't react in any way. I pillowed the good side of my face against my arm, tried to ignore the way the curve of the floor cramped my spine, and closed my eyes. I think I slept, but if I did, it wasn't deeply. The sound of footsteps was still very far away when I came fully awake. This time I opened my eyes at once. Nothing had changed. I still could see the dull blue light through the round hole. I still could not see if Jared was outside it. Someone was coming this way. It was easy to hear that the footsteps were coming closer. I pulled my legs away from the opening, moving as quietly as I could, and curled up against the back wall again. I would have liked to be able to stand. It would have made me feel less vulnerable, more prepared to face whatever was coming. The low ceiling of the cave bubble would barely have allowed me to kneel. There was a flash of movement outside my prison. I saw part of Jared's foot as he rose silently to his feet.
"Ah, here you are," a man said.
The words were so loud after all the empty silence that I jumped. I recognized the voice. One of the brothers I'd seen in the desert, the one with the machete, Kyle. Jared didn't speak.
"We're not going to allow this, Jared."
It was a different speaker, a more reasonable voice. Probably the younger brother, Ian. The brothers' voices were very similar, or they would have been if Kyle weren't always half-shouting, his tone always twisted with anger.
"We've all lost somebody. Hell, we've all lost everybody, but this is ridiculous. If you won't let Dark have it, then it's got to die," Kyle added, his voice a growl. "You can't keep it prisoner here," Ian continued. "Eventually it will escape, and we'll all be exposed."
Jared didn't speak, but he took one side step that put him directly in front of